I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on LOP radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment, and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Doc says. Hello and welcome to the Doc Says on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania era book series and of the Doctor's Orders on lordsofpain.net. And wherever you may be listening, I thank you for making me a part of your day. Man, wrestling is in a crazy place right now, ladies and gentlemen. There is so much going on, and I have so much that I would like to briefly touch on today while maintaining my mission to present to you a shorter and compact podcast, given that with all this stuff going on, there's a million podcasts I'm sure you'd like to listen to. So my insight today will again center around the competition going on in the pro wrestling world, for market share, for attention, for my personal number one promotion. And so let's start today with WWE. I think it's been a real roller coaster ride of a couple of weeks as a pro wrestling fan in general, but particularly as it pertains to the mothership. I'll take you through my stream of consciousness, and perhaps it'll serve as a microcosm. The high from those two Wednesday shows the first week of October, the takeover-like episode of NXT, and then what I felt was an outstanding and emotionally gratifying episode of AEW Dynamite, made me want to tune into Friday Night SmackDown after all. If you listened last week, you may have picked up on the fact that it wasn't my original plan to watch on Friday night on October the 5th, October the 4th, because of the bait and switch on the previous Monday Night Raw, where they had Rollins versus Mysterio and then threw that out of the way on the night of. I've never been a fan of that strategy, and it was just, as a lapsed Raw viewer, to be brought back and ready to give WWE a chance and then to pull a bait and switch was not really all that, you know, it wasn't really going to tickle my fancy and make me want to tune back in on Friday night. Nevertheless, I was so jazzed up about AEW and NXT that I decided I'm on a wrestling high. I'm kind of anxious to see how WWE would answer the challenge of being on Fox, so I'll check it out anyway. WWE made it abundantly clear that night that its priority is everyone but you and me. Generalization inherent and accepted there. You know, I have frequently re-engaged over the past week in the never-ending debate with my pal Ray Cash, one of the dozen amongst thousands of wrestling fans that I've interacted with over the past 15 years as the Doc, who I've actually met in person. Our debate, mine and Ray Cash's debate, centers around whether or not WWE has changed, essentially, plus the concept of how much change a fan can endure before the identity of what shaped his or her fandom of WWE is so far removed from its foundational principles that fandom itself can no longer endure. I'll use SmackDown as the prime example of how WWE has changed. Once upon a time, there was a balance struck between things that attract casual viewers, a necessity in pro wrestling, you can't get around it, you have to do that, and what wrestling fans want, which, again, I'll generalize to include things like television shows with an identifiable narrative flow. Holistic might be the right word. Value placed on championships so that they feel like strong narrative drives rather than just props. Great angles, authentic promos, commentary that adds to the product, booking that makes you want to keep watching, awesome matches, new and interesting characters, and I'll throw this one in there as a personal choice that matters right now to me as much as anything else, a sense that contemporary talent is getting a fair shot to create a legacy on par with peers from past generations. Without that dynamic, the latter dynamic just spoken of, there would never have been a desire to write the WrestleMania era book series. Who gives a crap about legacy and a scripted sport, so to speak, if the people that are doing it now don't get a chance to match the accomplishments of their peers from the past? And that's a broad category, talking about drawing power. Championships is sort of a minor detail in that regard. The quality of the and the memorability of the stories that they tell, the matches that they have, etc. SmackDown on Fox was obviously a big opportunity for WWE to put its best foot forward, to show the world why WWE is special. Nearly 4 million people in the United States alone tuned in, so there was clearly a big interest, because 4 million people tuning in at one time for something on TV this day and age is, I mean, that's kind of a big deal. Here's what we got, and I'll tackle a few things about each item momentarily. The Rock cut a promo. The women's division got the spotlight. Wyatt and Rollins then got a nice spotlight too. Then we got a cathartic Kevin Owens win to oust Shane McMahon, however temporarily, which was followed by Strowman and Tyson Fury interacting in a genuine must-see mainstream kind of a moment that I think could be a huge boost to Braun Strowman, who needs it. Then Roman Reigns fought Rowan, and we got some Daniel Bryan in there too. And then Brock Lesnar squashed Kofi Kingston. Squashed. 8 seconds. 8 seconds is the amount of time that it took King Kong Bundy to beat SD Jones at WrestleMania. One. Or two. No, one. Brock Lesnar squashed Kofi Kingston to become WWE Champion. And we got another mainstream moment involving him and Cain Velasquez. If you so desire, go check out at the Doc LOP Twitter timeline and follow my thoughts from that show, SmackDown. I was enjoying the heck out of it because I thought, up until Brock squashed Kofi to set up Brock versus his UFC nemesis for the WWE Championship, no less, it had been a good example of WWE striking the aforementioned balance. Unfortunately, once Kofi's six-month title reign ended as it did, Amir, get this the hell out of the way so we can move on to the box office attraction from mixed martial arts. Out the window went the balance. And that's the heart of the issue, people. If you enjoy it, that's awesome. Good for you. But please don't attempt to say that this pattern is standard fare historically, because it's not. It's modern fare. And the pattern has been prominent enough since 2016 that it is making some of you believe that this is stock tried and true WWE, but it's not. I got back into it with Ray Cash in part because whether those of you who are out there that are annoyed by the rampant negativity in our community realize it or not, your attempts to explain why WWE is doing what it is doing goes against a belief that wrestling fans have developed. And for some of us, that belief has developed over 30 years. And that belief is in a balance being struck. Diehard wrestling fans tolerated and often came around to enjoying the likes of Lawrence Taylor, Donald Trump, and Floyd Mayweather. And laterally, they tolerated and often enjoyed the legendary returns that took place, that took the place of celebrity involvement as nostalgia for wrestling's past came further to the forefront this century. Think Hulk Hogan, Mick Foley, The Rock, Goldberg, etc. But that was when these non-wrestlers or legendary wrestlers were brought in as singular special attractions, typically once per year at WrestleMania or twice per year, also including SummerSlam. It created a dominant presence, did those special attractions, but contemporary talent was still afforded both the lion's share of the spotlight and this being perhaps the most important dynamic, a substantial creative focus on par with the special attractions booking. You like facts? Go back and compare the number of special attractions this decade compared to the first 30 years of the WrestleMania era. It'll blow your mind. And for years now, those special attractions have commanded the lion's share of the spotlight at peak times on the calendar, and even now beyond peak times on the calendar, and have been afforded a disproportionate creative focus compared to the contemporary stars. Not in every case, mind you, but in the majority of cases. Now, that's not a fact, but that is something that I think you can objectively, subjectively take a very close look at and determine realistically. Here's the thing. Don't confuse this, people. I am not always basing what I say in condemnation about WWE on just my dislike of that product. I have the ability, as do others, to take a step back and to look at it logically and to see what is it that has made me disgruntled and why am I disgruntled with this product. And it is through thorough study that these conclusions have been drawn. Look, WWE has never been perfect. It has never checked every box that consistently engaged fans generally care about, not even the vaunted Attitude Era. It's not about perfection, though. It's about balance. I've said this before, and I'll bring it back here. Your relationship with WWE is like a relationship with a person. And when a person changes who they are, if they accentuate some of the habits you merely tolerated because they were on the back burner, and that becomes more of the core of who they are, moving it to the main burner, then the relationship changes. That's been my personal issue with part-timers or legends, and was my primary issue with SmackDown in its debut on Fox. The habit of bringing them in was accentuated earlier this decade. And I'll clearly define it when we get to that episode of my WWE Decade in Review series. And it came at the expense, it has come at the expense, and it continues to come at the expense of letting contemporary stars thrive. Legends and mainstream interest spikes have become like a steroid injection to an ailing hip joint. It creates a temporary effect, but it leaves damage in its wake. And eventually, there's a reckoning. That reckoning is the rise of alternatives in pro wrestling. WWE could have had it all, and they've settled for less. It's straight from CM Punk's pipe bomb promo, right? Put another way, legends and mainstream interest spikes have become the new glass ceiling. Now, you can show me a ratings chart, and you can explain that however you want. You can acknowledge that WWE, because of the WWE Network and other reasons, has become as financially powerful today as it ever was in the boom periods. And I won't dispute you on that. However, none of that will change the fact that the actual product they put on weekly on TV and monthly on pay-per-view has changed. And that change is readily identifiable to the eye that looks at it closely. Wrestling fans don't care about the amount of money that WWE makes, no more than a fan of Tennessee Vols football cares that the football program's still banking while the on-field product nosedives, or fans of a soccer team care if a soccer federation earns millions from an appearance in the World Cup that also ends embarrassingly short of expectations, or no more different than that patients in American healthcare have any bit, any shred of sympathy for an industry that simultaneously profits as much as ever before despite the economic trends in the United States, yet patient outcomes are worse than ever before in recorded history. So here's the deal. Wrestling fans right now are a swarm of angry bees when it comes to WWE. Poking the hive, attempting to quell deep-rooted, belief-based ills with facts and figures about economics, is a fool's errand and a complete waste of your time. I mean no disrespect to Ray Cash, seriously, or anyone else who is fond of engaging disgruntled fans with rhetoric that intentionally or otherwise antagonizes a group of people desperate for change. In fact, I actually no more enjoy the rampant negativity of the IWC than you or anyone else, ladies and gentlemen, and those of you that have followed me throughout this decade would know that quite well, because though never quite to the extent of some of my peers, that I interact with that are still very pro and positive about WWE. I was once the guy beating that drum, saying, look, this is why they're doing what they're doing. It's fine. You know, yeah, but and some of the rampant negativity is ridiculous and idiotic. There's no question about that. But that's not specific to wrestling fans. That's specific to society itself. But here's the thing. I choose to label myself a protagonist against antagonists who antagonize a group of people who have a point I can clearly see and understand. I'm just an advocate against beasts, if you will. I had a friend years ago make several PSAs, public service announcements, about vaccines on social media, getting everyone riled up, but rarely creating constructive dialogue with his posts. One day I challenged him. I'm quite well read and researched on that subject because I see a lot of patients with vaccine injuries, forcing my knowledge to expand. I was curious to know if this friend, who's in advertising, knew jack shit about vaccines. I quickly learned that he did not. So every time I saw him post on social media about vaccines, I kindly reminded him that he didn't know anything about that subject and to choose a topic on which to stir people up that he actually knew something about. Because spreading narratives that antagonize people who rightfully demand change is an enemy of progress. Which is to simply say, I antagonize antagonists, sometimes as part of a wider self-made challenge against things that make sense economically, but don't otherwise make sense. Think of me like a lawyer in that way. And my client, in this case, the disgruntled WWE fan, has a freaking case. So what does that mean for my personal WWE fandom? I think it means that I'm at a point where I'm about ready to let it go. And let these other companies take full command of the spotlight, or earn it, in my life, anyway. Now, it's hard to do that, because just when you think, crap, you know, I'm ready to give up on this, you see something like Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch, Hell in a Cell, and all of a sudden you're like, this is why I am a WWE fan. This is what kept me a WWE fan through many years of creative ups and downs with all the things that I discussed earlier, that generally our community, as fans who have a deeper amount of passion for this product, for what gets put out on TV and pay-per-view, you know, that's why. I mean, Becky versus Sasha was fantastic. So, you know, you got the draft coming up, and the draft is going to, I guess, in many ways, you know, be a big part of what shapes what happens with these rosters and the kinds of shows they can put on. We're not that far removed from what I personally felt to be one of the better periods of WWE television in this decade, which was the SmackDown show from 2016 to 17. So I'm open to being convinced still, but WWE's weak, where they prioritize the mainstream attention well and above over the other dynamics, was, you know, I mean, that's, if anyone who's been following me for a while, and I've made it clear in these recent shows as this whole competition's come to the forefront, that's not really going to fly with me, and I'm quite confident it's not going to fly with other diehard wrestling fans. I know a lot of people in my community that ran in my circle for a long time that have up and just stopped watching. And these are people who I never thought would be in that place. Never thought I'd be in that place, but certainly not them. So let's talk about some products who are offering some very satisfying things, or showing glimmers of hope that a genuinely, solidly booked pro wrestling show can still exist and be geared toward pro wrestling fans. Now, I encourage a company like AEW, you go out and you find yourself a celebrity and you do it the right way. You strike that balance, because that, ladies and gentlemen, is how a product is built. That is how a product is sustained over the long haul. How fandom is built is you catch new viewers and then you entice them with what's actually on the show all the time. And that's the pro wrestling. You do a celebrity angle to build interest in the actual product. Call me crazy, but I think that WWE has forgotten how to execute its own formula. With all of that being said, I think that the door has been opened, certainly for me, for others, it seems. I've seen a lot of chatter this week about the National Wrestling Alliance and their first show that aired on YouTube Tuesday night, I believe it was. I've watched it. I was really impressed with the production value. But there's interest now, I think, in further cultivating a relationship with some of these other promotions that are all putting their best foot forward. And I think when you look at a company like Impact, which I tuned back into this week after WWE's sort of turned me off a bit last week, I look at Impact and I see a company that's, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the newly dubbed competition sort of pre-show, preview, if you will, that Impact's going to come on strong because they've got a great roster. They have a very good show. They produce really good pay-per-views. And now they're going to be on Access TV at the end of this month. They started their journey by showing some of their pay-per-views just here recently, but their first regular episode's going to air at the end of the month. And I'm excited about it. I've still been an Impact Plus subscriber. It's a streaming service that I think you would enjoy if you synced up with it. And the reason is because I think it's very user-friendly. It's got a sleek look to it. I've never had any streaming problems. Not one single time in these last 3+ months have I had a single issue with the streaming service. I got it as part of a promotional deal where if you bought Slammiversary, you got the Impact Plus for 3 months. I added that on to my free month that I got for being a new subscriber, so I'm still rolling along with that. That's not sustainable long-term, obviously, for them, but it's of great benefit to me. And I've enjoyed the heck out of it. I've been binging old TNA stuff. I've basically went through all of 2004, 2005, 2006, 2011, 12, and 13. Just catching up on stuff that I've either not revisited since it happened or that I never actually got to see because at the time of the early part of this decade, I really had no interest in checking out Impact Wrestling. But now I am, and I'll tell you what, man. I think that they've got some real assets, the kinds of assets that I am very invested in seeing how they develop. They did a great podcast with Scott D'Amore and Don Callis, and they were on Chris Jericho's Talk is Jericho podcast, I guess sometime in the last month or so, and I listened to it on the way to a business trip that I recently took, and I really enjoyed what they had to say. It gave me some really nice insight into the whole Access TV deal that they've scored and how their actual parent company that owns Impact Wrestling, Anthem, I believe, actually bought Access TV from Mark Cuban. So, I mean, they're sitting in a really nice spot, and that's an opportunity, I think, for them to cultivate a relationship with New Japan. New Japan also is on Access TV. So if you could mix and match New Japan talent with Impact Wrestling guys, I mean, I know I would love to see pretty much everybody on the New Japan roster against Brian Cage. Brian Cage, for those of you who don't know much about him, he was on Lucha Underground. He's kind of jacked like John Cena, but he moves in that fluid manner that John Cena always sort of looked like a bull in a china shop athletically. Brian Cage is a more graceful athlete. I'd love to see him against anyone. He's the Impact World Champion at the moment, and they've got their Bound for Glory show coming up. So there's a lot of good things going on in Impact Wrestling, but Tessa Blanchard, who I saw at an indie show, I think I mentioned that on this podcast not too terribly long ago, she's a fantastic talent, and she's only like 23 years old or something like that. So she could pop up in the next few years on any of the major shows, and maybe right now I feel like she is one of those talents, along with Brian Cage, along with Sammy Callahan, and along with several others. I'm a big fan of Moose on Impact Wrestling, that are sort of they are the rising tide that's lifting the Impact ship. And so I'm very invested in all of their success. I think that what all of them have done across the last 2 years on Impact Wrestling with the well-written show that they've developed is excellent. And I would encourage you, if you're looking for some other wrestling to watch, to put them in the hat and put them in the game, because I think they deserve it. They are one of the, collectively, one of the more engaging wrestling shows on TV for diehard wrestling fans. So that was certainly part of my week, is re-engaging with Impact ahead of Bound for Glory, catching up on their weekly shows, which they air like a week after on their streaming service. And then, of course, they'll be on Access TV soon. The NWA, which I mentioned a few moments ago, a lot of talk on my Twitter timeline anyway about the NWA this week, and rightfully so. YouTube is where they present their stuff, so it's all free. Now, the in-ring dynamic for them is just okay. You know, I really didn't enjoy too terribly much any of the in-ring action from their program, but the look of it, if you're a fan from way back when, if you have seen footage of the old NWA broadcasts, Georgia Championship Wrestling, those old TBS-type shows, the studio shows, you will love the NWA program. And, you know, I think that if you look at what they did best on their show was the promos. The promos felt authentic. They felt like I was being talked to by real people who had things to say that meant something to them. It wasn't scripted. It wasn't canned. It wasn't homogenized. It was legitimately engaging. And it made me feel something. It invoked a visceral reaction out of me, which is something that it's increasingly difficult for promos to do, because I've heard them for the last 30 years, and the only way that they're really engaging to me is if they feel authentic. And Nick Aldis, who has his critics dating back to his time in Impact Wrestling, has become, in my view, one of the better promos in the entire business. He believes in what he's doing. And if Billy Corgan is like Santa Claus for the National Wrestling Alliance, then Nick Aldis is Rudolph the freaking Red-Nosed Reindeer, because there is no going anywhere without Nick Aldis. Santa Claus may have the vision and may be the executioner of whatever grand plan has been cooked up, but man, I think that Nick Aldis is doing a great job leading that company to where it really hasn't been relevant in so terribly, terribly long. And we've talked about it, you know, maybe a half dozen times on this podcast in total, even in passing over the last several months. But I think it's going to deserve more attention. And it's going to be the strength of what they end up doing. And maybe we'll talk about the NWA next week. We'll see. I'm kind of in this loosey-goosey sort of mode with what direction this podcast takes week to week, because I'm back in the week-to-week mode of watching wrestling for the first time in quite a while. But if we do talk more about the NWA in the near future, I think it's going to be predicated upon what they can do to grow their brand. Nick Aldis, great. The promo cut by Eli Drake, a former Impact guy himself, on this first episode of NWA Power. Excellent. Excellent talker. Both those guys are. Every single talking segment on that show I thought was excellent. The production was the thing I was most surprised about, because when you hear that there's going to be a show that airs on YouTube and you just watch something like the 10 Pounds of Gold segment, it's gritty. You know what I mean? I mean, 10 Pounds of Gold's gritty. A lot of YouTube stuff you see on wrestling, it's gritty. It doesn't feel like the type of thing you could take and put on an actual television station. But NWA answered the call. Power looked fantastic. The production was slick. It was old school, but in that great kind of a way. And it looked clean as can be. It was a fantastic production from NWA. Kudos to everybody in that production department and everybody who put that show together, including the talent, of course. But that was a really slickly produced show. And that's not what I was expecting. I was expecting something a lot grittier, something that just looked second rate, quite frankly, but that's not what they did. They put together something that looks first rate, and I think there's going to come a time if they can grow their roster, and I think that's going to be their greatest challenge. Right now they've got, you know, they've got four reindeer, using the Christmas example. They've got four reindeer ready to pull the sleigh, and then a whole bunch of baby reindeer who may or may not ever be capable of adding to the eight or nine reindeer that pulls around Santa's sleigh. But we'll see what happens. Now, the big competition, obviously, I think week to week, is going to be what happens in the Wednesday Night War. And yet again, I thought AEW put together a really enjoyable show. I filled out a survey that was making its way around Twitter this week. AEW asked fans what their opinion was on various things. It was a pretty lengthy survey. They actually asked for quite a bit of feedback on themselves and the wrestling industry at large. So it was really TNT produced rather than AEW produced. They asked about your feelings on WWE, your favorite wrestlers, the things you thought that AEW Dynamite could improve upon. And I filled mine out Tuesday, and then Wednesday rolls around and it's time for Dynamite again. And one of the first things I put on things I thought AEW could improve upon was that I want to see good talking segments. I want to see something visceral, like I was talking about with the NWA, something that felt authentic and felt like it was, you know, something that just kind of, you know, when CM Punk cut the pipe bomb promo years ago, it wasn't necessarily what he said, I guess. It was just the manner in which he said it, the reaction it invoked. It gave you the feeling that what he said was revolutionary because of the emotion and the actual, just the everything he put behind it. And you don't get that from WWE promos because they are so scripted. Now, there are guys out there in WWE who do a really good job with it. I think that Seth Rollins as a heel did a great job with it. I think that Samoa Joe does a great job with it. I think John Cena was always one of those guys who could take the WWE script, put his own spin on it, and make it feel authentic no matter what was written on that sheet. And Becky Lynch is another one who I think does a great job of that in the here and now. I wanted to see more talking segments from AEW because I think that's a missing piece of the pro wrestling puzzle in 2019. I think part of what led us to this moment in time where there's such a competition where AEW could even exist in the first place is a byproduct of WWE basically dumbing down the talking segments to the point where they are mostly monotonous, totally skippable, perfectly fit for the highlight reel packages because no one has anything really all that interesting to say. You can't build heat on feuds through talking like you used to because people don't have interesting things to say. Even someone like Jon Moxley, formerly Dean Ambrose, he's a great talker, but if you give him canned, crappy material, then he's just going to be able to only do so much with it. I think that AEW did a good job of sort of letting loose a little bit with the talking the talking dynamic in week two. A lot of that came from Chris Jericho's promo. Most of that was on account of Chris Jericho's promo. I can't wait to hear them unleash Jon Moxley on that microphone, but that segment, that part of the show this week was dedicated to Chris Jericho, introduces the Inner Circle, takes some shots at WWE. That's the kind of stuff that fans who are really hungry for someone to acknowledge that it's okay to be disgruntled, that it's not silly or stupid or overly negative to be disgruntled with WWE, to be actually fed up to the point of wanting to look elsewhere for their wrestling fix. Someone needed to acknowledge that on the AEW broadcast in a smart way that didn't necessarily, you know, that if you were a non-wrestling fan and you didn't know the insider stuff, that it wouldn't be so insider that nobody else could pick up on it. I think Chris Jericho did a good job with that, and I suspect that once the microphone gets in their hands that you'll see Cody be able to do that, that you'll see Jon Moxley be able to do that. I loved hearing Pac. I do. By the way, if you're wondering why they changed it to Pac, it's because Pac sounds like X-Pac, which is a very WWE thing. Calling him Pac makes him sound more original. So you take those dynamics, Pac on commentary during, I can't even remember what match he did commentary for, but he did a good job in his role. He's actually a very underrated talker himself. So I really enjoyed AEW. I thought they won the week. I thought last week, obviously, as mentioned on this show, that AEW and NXT were sort of neck and neck in their own unique ways. This week, I thought that AEW brought a little bit more to the table, in part because I thought that they owned the match of the week. Private Party versus the Young Bucks was a pay-per-view caliber, absolutely fantastic tag team match. I had sort of surmised in my mind that the way they might go about moving Private Party on, because I did halfway expect them, if not 75%, expect them to win. I thought it would be by the interference of Ortiz and Santana. And it wasn't. I thought it was a cool booking strategy to just let the new team go over clean. They're trying to build this tag team division. I think next week one of the things we'll focus on is the tag team tournament, because it'll take further shape, and I'm really excited about that. That's one of the biggest things about AEW that I love, is their tag team division. And now you've got Private Party, who just killed it in their biggest spotlight match in their whole careers, and they're going to advance on in that tournament, and we'll see what happens with the Young Bucks. But you know, they're starting to take some losses pretty consistently here, and you know, I for one like that. I think that having a little bit of parity is good. I think maybe the team to beat now becomes the Lucha Brothers, and we'll see what happens as that tournament advances. Not as strong a week from NXT. It had its moments. I did think it was very interesting that USA Network afforded them that added bit of time for the Kushida versus Walter match. I thought that was the highlight of the show. I thought that the rest was fine. I liked the Cruiserweight title being on NXT, and I think it's actually quite fascinating, because you know, if you followed my columns on lordsofpain.net, and if you've kept up with my work long term, I love 205 Live. 205 Live to me was WWE's best program, because you know, it's paid there for a while, particularly in 2018. They took it off the pay-per-view circuit, so all the big matches happened on 205 Live, and it created this dynamic in which the whole concept of that roster was built around the week-to-week television show. There was no pay-per-view for them really to take part in for a good stretch. They would sporadically show up. I thought they kept it really going well throughout this last physical year. And so to add the best week-to-week program that WWE produces in terms of building characters, in terms of match quality consistently as well, I thought it was right there neck and neck with NXT. So to add that to NXT just further bolsters it. And there's a lot of really good talent on the 205 Live roster. So they've only strengthened it. Leo Rush as the new champion's an interesting choice. I'll have to let that play out. Not as strong a week overall from NXT in my view, and that's going to be the interesting dynamic in play for them, is they've got to figure out how, if they're not going to load up every show with a bunch of takeover quality matches, and they're only really going to build with, you know, a steady stream of interesting matches that fall right below the takeover caliber, then, you know, where are they going to find someone who can do what Chris Jericho or Jon Moxley can do? Velveteen Dream, I thought, actually, in his first opportunity to get on a live microphone and knock it out of the park, seemed a little bit slow and uncomfortable. So I think Velveteen Dream is the key to that whole process. His success, I think, could be how to maximize NXT success on Wednesday nights. But we'll see. All in all, a very interesting week in wrestling, a lot of new things on the table. Those are my thoughts on WWE. We'll see how the draft takes place. By the next time you hear me, the draft will be completed, and we'll have a whole new set of things to talk about. But let's talk about all the other stuff available. Please hit me up at the Doc LOP on Twitter. Leave me feedback in the appropriate posts on the websites in which this podcast is posted, thechairshot.com and lordsofpain.net. Check out all the other shows on the Chairshot Radio Network. Have a great week. Enjoy wrestling right now. It's pretty awesome. Whether we love what's going on in certain companies or dislike what's going on in certain companies, this is a great time to be a wrestling fan. So let's enjoy it, let's embrace it, and let's spread those positive messages on social media, because the world needs that, not just about wrestling, but about everything. So, hashtag use your head. Check you next week, everybody. Your next audio prescription for all things professional wrestling will be on the 19th, next Sunday. See you then.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on LOP radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era.